Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today in Kansas City.
Yeah.
No coach is under more pressure this weekend than Kansas City's Andy Reid. A loss to the Houston Texans at Arrowhead Stadium would be inexcusable. It would further establish Reid as the passing Marty Schottenheimer, a terrific football coach who struggled in the postseason. The Chiefs are 9-point favorites over the Texans. Including the postseason, Andy Reid is 22-5 when he has an extra week to prepare for an opponent. There's no way the Chiefs should lose this game on Sunday. But as a longtime Chiefs fan who is intimately familiar with the work of Schottenheimer and Reid, I know exactly how Reid can blow this game. We witnessed it already this season. The Houston Texans came into Arrowhead Stadium in mid-October and snatched the soul of the Chiefs with a come-from-behind 31-24 victory. Andy Reid, as he's prone to do, abandoned his running game. In a game the Chiefs led 17-3 after one quarter and 24-3 after three quarters, Reid ran the ball 10 times the entire game. 10 times. Don't get fooled by the stat sheet. Patrick Mahomes' one run was a kneel down just before halftime. Kansas City never trailed by more than one score, but failed to find a way to balance their offense. Meanwhile, the Texans threw it 42 times and ran it 41. Andy Reid is one of the greatest play designers in NFL history. And one of the worst game managers, too. Hmm. It's not just clock management. It's game management. There's an easy explanation for why Reid loses track of the flow of the game. He spends too much time seated on the bench with Patrick Mahomes and ignoring his defensive unit. Reid is constantly managing Mahomes in the offense because he has a figurehead offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy. With the departures of Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy for head coaching jobs, the burden of guiding Kansas City's offense has fallen completely on the shoulders of Reid. It's too much for a head coach. In their regular season matchup, the Texans' offense destroyed KC's defense. Reid needed to use his offense to protect his overmatched defense. Reid needed to shorten the game with his running game, which averaged 5 yards per attempt on its 10 carries. I know the mainstream media has everyone convinced right now that Bieniemy is the black Mike Martz and that it's criminal he hasn't been handed a head coaching job. But the truth is, there's no compelling history of former running backs converting to offensive coordinators in the modern passing era of the NFL. The last one to do it on a high level was Dan Reeves with the Cowboys in the 1970s. As a head coach in the 80s and 90s, Reeves' reputation was he inhibited the passing game. My point is, Andy Reid has an inferior offensive staff, and he's overworked. It could cost the Chiefs on Sunday. I've already seen it happen this season. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Is Andy Reid under the most pressure this weekend?
Yes, no doubt. It's Andy Reid, and Andy Reid only just because of the long and short in terms of his resume and his career. Andy Reid needs to ascend where his actual genius warrants, which is an elite coach. Right now, he stands just short of being an elite coach all time because of the lack of a Super Bowl championship. So if you put Andy Reid into the conversation of a Super Bowl champion and then they win, guess what? Andy Reid is now where he properly deserves. This week, though, the long and short is, we know that resume, Andy, you've always come up short somehow, some way. And the short of it is, you're better than the Houston Texans. But I'm not the player that's built to blame it on coach. So he's under the most pressure because I know what the standard is. I know what the media, what we will do to Andy Reid if they lose this game. But when we lose the game, it's based on what we do. It's not based on certain play calls and certain situations. It comes down to critical moments. It comes down to critical situations. But my example is, as we're sitting here, this is the 20-year anniversary of the Music City Miracle, and that's going all around viral. Everybody's showing that play again. Was it a forward pass? Yes, it was, damn it. Or was it a lateral? No, it wasn't. Point being this, after that game, we lost the Super Bowl opportunity in the playoffs, obviously, and they fired our special teams coach, Bruce DeHaven. And I was like, why did they fire that man who was amazing at what he did, who every day we sat in special teams meetings would say, hey, y'all, we going to L.A., right? That means lane assignments. We're going to L.A., lane assignments. He used to say it all the time. What happened on that play in the Music City Miracle? Everybody forgot they lane assignments, but we fired the coach for scapegoat purposes. I think that right now Andy Reid's not under that kind of fire, but still we're going to blame him unnecessarily.
No, I'll take this because Andy Reid is under the most pressure. But I think what Andy Reid has to do is ignore the outside noise. Jason, obviously, you were around Kansas City when Marty Schottenheim was there. And I think the one thing that Marty did, the outside noise eventually crept into the way that we performed in the locker room. Hmm. The way that he called the game, he wanted to show risk-taking because that's how he was criticized. If I'm Andy Reid, if I could give Andy Reid any advice, be you. Your team is built to play the game in a video game fashion. If I'm playing Madden, the first team that I'm picking up are the Kansas City Chiefs. And because the Kansas City Chiefs have superior personnel coming off the bye week, I think Andy Reid has to call the game to blow the Houston Texans out of the stadium. Don't dial it back. You don't have a running game that can enable you to play safe. Put points on the board and play downhill. Your defense is playing better. I think he just needs to be himself. Call the game in a very aggressive
way. Do you, Andy?
I think the pressure is elsewhere. I think the most pressure is elsewhere, and I think it's based upon expectations. I think you did a very clear job of illustrating the lack of expectation for him to have success in the postseason. I think everything that you just illustrated and why he should be nervous or under pressure to get those results are the very reasons why Andy Reid and this perceivably
who's
overworked.
Under more pressure?
You know what? I would put it on LaFleur or on Curl. And the reason why I would put it on one of those two teams is based upon what you've paid Russell Wilson and the amount of responsibility that you've placed at his feet to be the guy that carries this Seattle Seahawks team. And this is one of those defining.
He already
moments.
Has the Super Bowl. Go, move on.
He does.
Move on.
But I'm really not based. You can't just base it off of he has a Super Bowl or Super Bowl appearance to say who has the most pressure. That could create the pressure. The bar is set for him to win a Super Bowl. Andy Reid's bar is not set to win a Super Bowl because he has not won one. So once you've set the bar winning a Super Bowl, then now you have the expectation of winning one.
Explain LaFleur.
Well, because I think that when you're looking at how strong a personality that Aaron Rodgers is and the type of season that they had, and is it given to the defensive side of the ball or is it given to the offensive side of the ball, I think their performance in this weekend's game will play out in a very interesting way between the head coach and its
LaFleur star. LaFleur would be my number two. Not bad.
All right.
But – Andy Reid's under the most pressure because, again, this, like Marcella says, he is a great coach.
Great.
He's got to get it done in the postseason to justify and to further elevate his greatness. And I said it in the Whitlaw. I think he can blow it. I've seen enough of Andy Reid that I think he could blow this game against the Texans. They're 9-point favorites, but even at home, even coming off a bye, I can see them figuring out a way to Mickey Mouse and blow this game.
Yeah, Andy Reid has the defense and the offense he needs to finally get over that hump in Kansas City. There were times in Philadelphia he had it. They got close. Now this is the time to strike. If you just look at his years in Kansas City since 2013, this defense ranks up there in terms of what they can do. They're seventh right now in scoring defense. So what does that mean? With the fifth best scoring offense, that's probably your best balance that you've seen outside of the first year he was there, when he's trying to learn and get his guys in, and there's a lot of turnover. So this is the opportunity. Everything's fully matured. Your system's in
play.
Can
he blow it?
Can he blow it?
Yeah, this weekend.
No, he can't blow it. One, I don't think he will blow it. They're better. They're superior to Houston. Two, he won't blow it because if something goes wrong with this team, it's going to be because of lack of discipline, a D Ford play or something like that. That's not all on coach. Coach tells you what to do. You still have to be the player to actually execute that. I wouldn't blame coach for those moments.
No, I wouldn't blame him. And I think, look, part of Andy Reid's issues, he grew up under Mike Holmgren. Having played under those guys in Green Bay when Andy was the tight end coach, Mike Holmgren always viewed the game from an offensive standpoint. So the one thing they think about, score, score, score. They don't think about playing the game in a complementary fashion. To me, the Kansas City Chiefs are the vintage Golden State Warriors. They play with the three ball. They're explosive playmakers, Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Pat Mahomes. They need to shoot the three ball and blow them out the building. Trying to get him to play a complimentary style, that's not who he is. Mm. I think he has to keep the pressure on the opponent by going for it and really trying to put a 40 spot on the Houston Texans.
Can they blow it this weekend?
They won't blow it.
They can blow it.
They can, but they can't blow it. Miami beat New England.
Right, but they won't blow it. I agree. They can blow it, but they won't blow it. And again, when I say most pressure and in terms of can he blow this, sure, he can blow it, but I think he does make it to the next round. I think the further he goes, the pressure level will go up for Andy Reid because now he's getting closer to that place that he has not been able to conquer.
And the competition is stronger the higher you go. So then
you're
which one is
he's
really
going to play against Baltimore next week, right?
Yeah. So. Coaching is better, too. The coaching is better when you get down the line. Yep. I don't know if Houston is coached well enough to push the pace on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we saw J.J. Watt come off the street and make plays that turned the game around against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. I think J.J. Watt will be even better this week. I'm not going to go out here. I mean, they're 9-point favorites. They're at home. The guy's record coming off a bye is tremendous. I see the Chiefs getting off to a tremendous start. But I just saw it in mid-October, 17-3. They had this game and gave up 20 points in the second quarter and then wet the bed the second half of the game. He can screw this up. Will he? I don't think so. At home, coming off a bye, I don't think so. I think the guy is overworked. I'm not kidding. I've never seen another coach spend as much time with their quarterback, head coach, as Andy Reid does, and I think he loses track of what's actually going on in the Florida
Bills.
Game.
Yeah, you met the Bills, and they were overmatched.
J.J. Watt came off the street to play the Bills.
And they were overmatched. Yeah, we knew what you meant, though. Yeah. But they were overmatched and outmanned in that game. And I don't see this Buffalo team as good as they are and have played. I don't see them being as good as Kansas City.
No, and to your point about you always talk about Andy Reid hanging with the quarterback, that's something that Mike Holmgren used to do with Brett Favre. That's something where Andy Reid picked that up. He used to do that with Donovan McNabb.
Right.
In general, what he wants to be the head coach, offensive coordinator, and he trusts his defensive coordinator to do his job. Because he has so much trust in Steve Spagnuolo, he feels like he can go to the other end and say, hey, Steve, you got this. I'm going to focus on making sure that we can get this offense right, which is why he's always around Pat Mahomes.
And my problem with that is, because, again, you can trust your defensive coordinator, but to the head coach has, oh, man, we're in this kind of game. If I don't protect my defense today, we're going to lose this because our defense is out of sorts. And that's what I think he loses track of in the flow of the game. It's like, whoa, I got to bail my defense out here instead of just trust Spagnuolo. Spags has got this. He didn't have it in mid-October. Hopefully the Chiefs defense has improved. hopefully we won't be in that position. James Harrison and LeVar Arrington are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to the Panthers, who have reportedly filled their head coaching vacancy, hiring Baylor coach Matt Rhule to take over Ron Rivera's old job. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reports that Rhule has signed a 7-year deal worth $62 million.
Go ahead, Matt.
That can go even higher with incentives. Mm. The hire raises a lot of questions about what the future may hold for Cam Newton. And that's where our question is this a good hire for Cam Newton?
No. Because all this hire says is Cam is gone. Gone. Money talks. 760? Coach, who? What's his name again?
Matt Rhule.
I mean, I'm not disrespecting the man or what he's done, but have you done this at this level to get this? So money talks to Cam Newton. And Cam Newton, who we heard reportedly, was a great asking price for one Cam Newton and his services if you want them. You don't dangle Cam Newton out there unless you're thinking about trading him. Now you sign a coach who has a 7-year deal. Think about this in terms of calendar. Do you want Cam Newton at 31 in a 7-year deal and then he retires or falls off around year four, year five? That's the prove it time for a coach in a 7-year deal. So he doesn't want to go to free agency or a rookie in the draft around year four, year five. It doesn't add up. So you don't give a coach this type of runway and say start with someone old, an old plane with that much runway. He's going to start fresh and new because he knows he has that time and he's going to draft or he's going to try and groom.
I agree with you, but let's be clear, like John Gruden got 10 years and stuck with Derek Carr for these first
Yeah, but
years.
Not the same vehicle we're talking about. Derek Carr is younger. Derek Carr doesn't have the same style of play.
Yep.
And they have a big move that we'll see if Derek Carr joins.
I don't like it. I don't understand it. To be honest with you, it don't make no sense. He's got 7 years, $60 million, and he's done what at the pro level? His college, what is the, he did 11-3 at Baylor last year. I think he's 47-43 over his last 7 years as a head coach in college. Mm. He gets a 7-year deal. So this is the blackest show around, right? That's where it's supposed to be. Good. So let's go to this right here, right now.
Fearless
and blackest show around. I'm going to give you that, okay? That's what I'm going to right now. So
Lord,
let's go back to 2003. They implemented something by the great Dan Rooney called the Rooney Rule, right? Mm. That gives minorities a chance to get these positions, okay? Mm. And in 2001, 2002, you had three head coaches at that time, and I believe it was Tony Dungy of minorities, Herm Edwards and Dennis Green. Fast forward 17 years from now, and we're in the same position with three minority coaches and Mike Tomlin, we got Lynn and Brian Flores, okay? What has the Rooney Rule did, but give somebody who is not qualified a 7-year, $60 million deal that has not done anything at this level? If Dan Rooney was alive today, he'd be pissed. To see what it has done. So now it's just come down to it. Let's check the box. We got a minority to get an interview. We check the box and let's move on. I don't understand this. I don't like this. And this dude actually had the nerve from what they say to call the Giants and say, hey, y'all want to match this? The Giants said, you know what? Hey, we go get crazy, but we ain't going to get that crazy. So this is not a good move for Cam, and I don't understand the move at all.
I'm biased, and I totally look at what James said, and some of it I respect. I respect the Rooney Rule, of course. I'll disagree a little bit on what you were saying, and the reason why I'll say, yes, it's a good deal.
Let's enter into the record, though. You played with Matt Rhule.
Yes. I'm a tad bit biased.
I know, but let's
explain the bias. With him.
He was a senior linebacker.
Smartest football player
I had been around at that time, respect. Him and Aaron Collins.
Yeah, I love that.
And had a great experience with him and have been friends with him, remained friends very close for a lot of years until present day. So he's like a brother to me. Mm. But this isn't about Matt Rhule. The question is, do you think that Matt Rhule hire is good for Cam? So we could attack Matt Rhule all you want. But the reality here is that Cam Newton has to make this work. This is Cam's last possible opportunity to be considered a legit franchise quarterback. So it has to work. It had better work for him. If we're talking about, and here's where I say I disagree. If you're talking about getting to the prove it moment in year four of your coaching contract in your career, because they gave him such a long deal with such high numbers, I think number one, year one, is the most important year for him. And that year one being him setting the tone for what this franchise is going to look like, what the identity is it going to be coming from him. And if Cam can buy into that and support that, it really could make it a possible saving grace for his career.
I can't buy into anything he says because he hasn't done anything at this level that makes me want to believe that what he's saying
is
true.
Jimmy Johnson was in the same spot.
I understand. How many people? How many coaches can you name on one hand? You can't even fill your hand up that came straight from college and went to the pros and were successful.
Here's the only problem. Here's the problem with your reasoning. The problem is like I said, in that year one, you have an opportunity to build the identity of your team as the head coach of that team. This is the pros. So if you come into that room as James Harrison and could be possible future Hall of Famer at that point, all pro, they just gave that man $60 million, Debo. So if you come into that meeting room, I can recall when Marty came in and Bruce Smith and Daryl Green and those guys did not like Marty Schottenheimer's coaching style. But you know what Marty did? He pushed through it. And both those guys were not on the team the following year. And to me, it comes down to a coach has to be able to overcome if a player is a vet that doesn't like it or doesn't think that you're proven. A coach has to overcome if there's a franchise quarterback that may be too old or may be too beat up. That coach is being paid $60 million for what? To come in and figure out what they need to do for that team. And I think that's what he's been called to do.
Listen, James, we're going to get to the Rooney part of this probably tomorrow. We're going to take a beat, think about today, want to talk about whether it's good or bad for Cam Newton. There certainly is a discussion to be had about what's going on with the Rooney Rule. But today, I came into the conversation thinking this was bad for Cam, but the more I think about it, I think he got a long-term deal and that kind of money, and it gives him the freedom to really evaluate Cam and do whatever he wants to do. Maybe he wants to come in, he's got his mind made up, let's get rid of Cam. But I don't think there's any risk for him to, hey, let me go a season with Cam Newton, an extremely talented guy at some point in his career, a former MVP, a guy that has carried a franchise before. Let me take this year and try to figure out if there's something there. And if I have to discard him.
You think he takes that year to do that? Or yes. Does he come in and say, I got 7 years. I'm going to make this team without the guys that were here before me. I'm going to make this my team. I'm going to get rid of anybody that is not going to give me the credit that I deserve for making this team what it's going to be.
I don't think with that kind of leeway and that kind of backing, I don't think you discard any asset. Potential asset. That's just an ego thing you're talking about. The smart thing to do with the kind of leeway is like, hey, man, Cam Newton was the number one overall pick. And when healthy, we've seen signs of him being a very productive player.
Yeah.
Why not try to see what's there? And that's what I think he'll do. And then you can move on from him next year.
When you're trying to redefine culture or when you're trying to really look at your roster to restore it, you set someone up for failure when you grab an unproven coach and give them that much runway because it doesn't create urgency. So now you can say there's a new coach and I have to work for him, but that has a limit. What gives you real motivation is a coach who's sitting there saying, I got 3-4 year contract. That's where I got 1-2 years to make this work. When you have a 7-year contract, you can go out there and do what you want to do to the tune of what John Gruden did in his first year, 4-12. And everyone's like, what is going on? And then this year they responded. But what we're saying for Cam Newton is he can't just have a mulligan year. This year is the urgent year for Cam Newton in terms of what's
good.
And good for Cam Newton and bad when the coach comes in who's not on that same calendar and schedule.
It's good for the coach as well. I do understand what you're saying, but I still think it's good for the coach as well. The sense of urgency is because Cam has not been able to prove what type of player he is today, right now.
Nah, that's not fair.
That
Cam,
is fair.
Cam has
that's
to run right now in this moment, and Coach
field.
Gets to jog.
But he's not.
That's the problem. Look, Coach, you are not as motivated as me to get this done immediately because you
see,
are going to.
I understand
it because of the contract.
But
term.
You still got to look at it from the coach's perspective. He is coming in unproven. He has a sense of urgency to prove himself.
Not with a 7 year.
Not with a 7 year.
Get sure he is.
Oh, stop.
Sure
it,
he
man.
Is.
You got that
I guarantee $60 million.
It's 60 guaranteed.
I'm going to figure
it's
this
not
out
our 60.
As I go if I need to.
Thank you.
That's so what he's supposed
hold
to do.
Second. Hold for 1 second, though. You're honest to goodness, do we really believe coaches think that way?
Oh, yeah.
That it needs to be my team. I need to do it
no,
my
no,
way.
No,
with,
oh, no. They're like, oh, I got time here. There's no urgency
yes.
for me to
no.
win.
It's
no.
a, yeah. There's a sense of urgency.
It's a sense of urgency, but I have time. I don't need to do anything drastic because
right.
I have 7 years to build.
That actually puts you in a good position to make sound decisions. This,
correct.
That
mm.
When
correct.
You have time. But
not with
Matt
an old
Rule's
agent,
not going to come
but
in
he's
here.
He's got a fit.
Matt Rule's not coming in here thinking like, hey, yeah. man, I've made it. I got $60 million in the tank. It doesn't matter what happens here.
I'm not saying it doesn't matter what happens, but the fact of the matter is, I do have 7 years.
Right.
Do you think do you think Gruden would have did what he did over there if he didn't have 10 years?
Thank you.
You haven't seen
you think
a,
he
you haven't seen a coach. You haven't seen a coach get prematurely fired. I've seen it happen
oh, yeah.
a whole bunch of times.
But you're still getting that 60.
They're still going
to
get paid.
If you go to the batter's box and they say, oh, unlimited
you're not
strikes.
Try and tear it up.
You got unlimited strikes.
Away.
You can swing it whatever you want to. You can let some go by. You can do whatever you want.
So his reputation means nothing to him.
I think he's not on par with the average coach and accomplished coaches. No one is walking around here saying I got 7 years already banked up except John Gruden. And that's unfair for a guy who's going to come in and now have to deal with an urgent matter. That's unfair
well,
to
why
that
can't
player.
That speak to the value of him as a coach?
Oh, I'm not talking about him as a coach. I said they set him up.
And if that speaks to the value of him as a coach, then why can't he take the time to build the team the right way?
Well, that's a different conversation because I think
right.
that Tepper, the new owner, has overvalued his value. Given a guy from college, 7 years, 60 million.
Come on.
That's a mistake.
No one else has that.
I don't think that's, there's nothing wrong with that.
They gave him the
you
contract.
You are blinded by him being your
I
boy.
Am not blinded
yes, you
by
are.
It.
You
know, I'm
put his horse blinders on and rings
are.
In his
Let's
mouth and leave him
on.
Around.
Let
but
me put him on.
LeVar, I wouldn't give any coach
Thank
7 years, 60
okay.
million.
No players.
I wouldn't even do it for Belichick.
So there's a value there that ownership group sees.
No, it's not.
What did he see? His first year is David Tepper. You know what David Tepper is?
There is. He's
the richest owner in the NFL.
That's it.
All that means is I got so much money here.
I got so much money here.
I don't even want to go through the due diligence.
So they're not going.
And then the same guy he tried to hire called up. He boo talking the Giants.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Right.
Hey, dog, you want to match this?
No.
If I walked in that locker room as a Panther,
y'all
I knew you wanted to be in New York
if
before
I knew
here,
that,
I'm on your
I'd
head.
I threw my hat in the ring.
Y'all need to stop. You wasn't getting that job.
You right.
Need to stop that.
You right about that. Sure enough, wasn't
you
getting.
You ain't.
Yeah.
James Harrison, LeVar Arrington are back. It's time for That Dude's Dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
2 tons of fun. This is the O-line y'all don't want to see right here. It's That Dude's Dudes. Let's start off with Danielle Hunter. Second team All-Pro Danielle Hunter. What a strip sack science. You're going to see him shed the right tackle. Give me that Drew Brees and punches the ball out for a Vikings turnover. How did this go down? Man, he making up moves on the fly. Inside double swipe. I said a hip, hop, inside. That's called being a better athlete, but he doesn't cross face and he gets skinny in the hole. That's why it actually worked. Then he gets to Drew Brees right here. And I'm going to take y'all to science class and show you how this went down. Bam! Hit Drew Brees on the tricep. You guys know the tricep is connected to the forearm. Forearm's connected to the hand, connected to the fingers, and connected to the ball, and that comes out. Ooh, Drew Brees. That surgery came back to haunt you. Danielle Hunter, you're our third. That dude of the week. Let's go to number two, Rashawn Evans. Superman. Gonna give us a little bit of this LeVar leap over here. Flies through the Patriots blocking. Drill Sonny Michel.
He balled out.
For the goal line stop. Yes, he did. He's locked in, too, right here. Sees the Patriots up to no good. Locks in on James White from the snap. LeVar mirroring his first step and running him down in the backfield. Davis takes flight, and he Supermans that all you in the backfield right there, James White. Yeah. That boy's good right there.
He balled out
Rashawn
all game.
Evans, that dude, number two, baller. And let's go with the man himself, straight off the shelf. You know who this is.
It's J.J. Watt, and he's here to rock.
Take a seat. Get down, Josh Allen. You know what this is. J.J. Watt got the whole family in the building. He's actually better than his brother, too. Square up right here. Watt sets up the punch. This is going to be a big fight, but he's going to hit him with that Mayweather. Faint. Oops. I didn't punch you. I actually went with a rip in that move. Oh, my God. Cody Ford got caught. Josh Allen, take a seat. Look, Smokey, I ain't the smartest man. Looks like you were eating some corn right there. J.J. Watt's hype. Josh Allen, take a seat. And J.J. Watt, you're number one dad dude of the week.
All right, that was great. Thank you, Marcellus. All right, let's move to a big story. Brewing in Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson and the Ravens host the Titans in a divisional showdown Saturday night. And it sounds like Tennessee is just as in awe of Lamar as everyone else. Head coach Mike Vrabel said Lamar is the best player in the league and impossible to tackle, while defensive end Jarrell Casey went even further, saying Lamar is, quote, from Mars. Mm. All right, I can't wait to hear from you three defensive guys. Are the Titans perhaps giving Lamar too much respect?
No, no such thing. I'm a big fan of Eastern philosophy. My son is taking martial arts right now. And one thing I've learned is how you can dismiss your ego and your pride in a moment and fully respect your opponent. What that allows you to do is make the right computations, the right inputs into your program of preparation for the week. So when you see Lamar Jackson on film, you enter different coordinates. You're like, yo, this is another level. And then the work begins. It's time to go out there and prepare for the next level in terms of competition. These guys are going to say it because Mike Vrabel says it. Why does Mike Vrabel say it? Because the best coach of all time says it. Bill Belichick will prop up every single opponent. You know why? Because he fully respects them. Everyone on that football field is a black belt. Some of us are different degrees. So I love this because it's a healthy mindset. No fear, no ego. And the pride kicks in the preparation to go out there and stop Lamar Jackson.
It's a no for me as well. And quite frankly, if you do believe what you're saying, he's from Mars, we can't tackle him, then you should all be fired. My opinion. I don't want any of you if you don't think you can tackle it. Get out of here.
So
if
you think they're giving him too much respect?
You said, which one are you going? You said no.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Are they giving him too much respect?
I don't think they are because, again, it's ridiculous to believe that would be true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're not really giving them too much respect. Gassing him up. It's tongue-in-cheek, right. Okay. So sorry if I confused you. Mm. No, they are not giving them too much respect because if that were true, then none of them need to be on that team. You do not have a fighting chance in that game if you believe you cannot tackle Lamar Jackson. If you cannot be on the field and compete with him while he's competing on Mars and you're on Earth, that's ridiculous to think that. As a competitor, you got to go out there and get it.
I would say you're saying they're giving him too much respect.
They're not. It's
I understand what you're saying. They're gassing him up.
Right.
I'm with you. I don't believe they're giving him too much respect. The whole thing is he is the best player in the NFL right now. He will get the MVP. And he's doing things that we haven't seen done since never. Okay? But the thing is, you don't go in there and give them bulletin board material and say, he's all right. He ain't all that. No.
No.
You know who he is? He's Superman with dark skin. He is the next coming of Jesus Christ himself. I'm going to gas him up and put him so high on the pedestal that he's going to be like, you know what? I might just walk in here and walk all over these boys. But behind those closed doors, we're talking about smacking him in his mouth and doing everything. And then when that's done, we go say, well, we just brought him from Mars back to Earth.
Mm.
Okay?
It makes your
It's nothing wrong with what they're doing there. You give him all the respect in the world. I don't want to give you no reason to come out there with a fuel for the fire and gassing him up, making him upset about his abilities. Mm-mm.
That's what I was
I just think that there's a thin line between, because again, you definitely don't want to give him bulletin board material, but I wouldn't want anybody on my team with the notion like that somehow he's so spectacularly different than everybody else. Because again, because he's going to do a couple things out on that field.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to break some ankles and do some things. And then I just don't want it creeping in my... Well, damn, there ain't nothing we can do with this dude.
No. I'm not telling my players that as we prepare. I'm telling them, look here. I'm showing them highlights of what he does. And you know what? I'm going over my game plan. And this is why we're going to dominate and while we're going to win this game. But I'm not letting you go out here in the media and give him any less than what you're giving him now and more. I want you to give him so much that he's just like, wow, maybe I am just so great. I could come out here and do this on one leg and one arm.
Yeah, it's a greater triumph if you prop him up as Goliath. And then you bring him down, that's a greater win for
Absolutely.
You. But bad boys move in silence in preparation.
No
so
question.
When we come back into this locker room and this meeting room, oh, we talking all madness about him. We coming at him. Every single player has a column of strengths and weaknesses.
No
I don't
question.
Care who you are. And they are highlighting those weaknesses. We have to get him to this spot. Maybe he doesn't like to roll right as much as he likes to roll left. Whatever those tendencies are that limit his ability, we're highlighting that. Outwardly, praise this dude. Let him come in there. We're not even thinking he's going to rest on his laurels because he's a competitor. We just want him to think we're coming because we know how great he is, so we have to be great ourselves.
What you got
to
understand is that they truly believe all that they were saying in their heart and soul. You know what we need to do? Hey, yeah, we go forfeit.
Forfeit.
Give him the game. We ain't even going to show up. They too good.
Right. So hey, don't take it literally.
And you best believe Lamar has his mom didn't show him a box of quotes. Pull out this quote from this team in high school, this team in college. They've been saying that to him for years.
Right.
They've been saying that in the media about Lamar for years. That ain't nothing new to Lamar to have the other team sit there and prop him up like that because of how talented he is. He's not buying into it.
With Lock and Wiley, Tony Gonzalez and James Harrison are back. Let's move to New Orleans,
man,
where the Vikings coughed up a 20-10 lead to the Saints, but hung on to win in overtime thanks to the often criticized Kirk Cousins connecting with Adam Thielen on a pass that Troy Aikman called the biggest of his career. Cousins then hit Kyle Rudolph on third down for the game-winning touchdown, and the Vikings are moving on to face the 49ers next week in the divisional round. All right, the question here is, did Kirk Cousins silence his critics?
Oh, absolutely. At least he should have. Oh, good, Noah. This dude was playing in Washington most of his career, and they talk about, oh, he's not clutch. He can't win a Super Bowl championship. In Washington, playing on Monday Night Football, not exactly the best sample size to see if a guy has the proper resources around him to make clutch moments happen. And what are clutch moments? Obviously, critical points in the game, and more importantly, important games. And how many important games did Washington have? So now we see him in a hostile environment, New Orleans, on the road, going against a Hall of Famer, potential GOAT in himself in Drew Brees. And what does he do before this play was that picture-perfect dime he threw to Adam Thielen on top of just having command the entire game. I hope the critics shut up.
No. No way. He didn't silence no critics.
Except you, Big Dog. You keep
talking. It's not possible. Listen, he got lucky. He got lucky. A broke clock is right twice a day.
Okay.
Oh, you understand that? And like my daddy said, The sun shine on the dog ass every once in a while. Mm. And it shined on him, okay?
Still a dog.
That's it. It's no way. He's not going to silence me until I see more consistency. He went there with no pressure. Nobody was expecting him to win. Did you see how he reacted after that win? He didn't even expect to win. Ooh, all this other stuff. If you out there and you're like, you know what, I'm about to go out here and dog these boys. And you get done, you done dog them boys, you go react like that? Have you ever?
Monkey off his back, though. Give him that.
I give him the monkey off his back for right now.
Right. That's
but
what
until
he celebrated.
No. I'm not believing in this. He's not silencing anyone. Next week, he go down there. Even if he beat them, I'm still not believing it. Because he's going down there again
with no pressure,
and nobody's expecting him to win.
They got a squad. No pressure.
Nobody's expecting him to win. They expect him to go down there and choke, do Kirk Cousins type things.
I like Kirk. I've liked Kirk for a long time. I've been in
I got no personal
I thought he
him.
Played really well. Last year, they lost, and it wasn't because of him. He needs a running game. When Kirk Cousins, first of all, he's not, when he has a running game, he is an elite quarterback. Just look at the numbers, what he's done since he's been here with the Minnesota Vikings. When Dalvin Cook is playing, and I said this before the game yesterday, if Dalvin Cook shows up, this guy, his play action pass ability with those receivers, he's going to make some plays.
I like Kirk
as long as Dalvin Cook is running the football. Without Dalvin Cook, he gets back to that inconsistent Kirk, but I'm happy for him too. That's a monkey off. That's a gorilla off his back, man. Mm-hmm. Just to win a playoff game finally, I think this is great for him. I'm so happy for him.
I just don't think in the wild card round you can silence critics. You can you know you can temporarily put a little tape over their mouth. But again, it's a wild card round. And the man's got like $90 million guaranteed. They didn't pay the dude $90 million guaranteed to win wild card playoff games. He's supposed to be a guy that is supposed to be able to elevate you all the way to the Super Bowl at that price. So for me, I do think he proved a little something, and I've been a longtime critic going all the way back to Washington, but he needs to win this weekend against the 49ers before I'm really willing to back all the way up.
What's unfair about that is you can gas the fire in a wild card round. Imagine he goes out there and lay an egg.
Yeah.
But you can't extinguish it with the same opportunity. Unfair by you in terms of that judgment and that opportunity for judgment. Kirk Cousins, as Tony talked about, is a guy that, I'm going to say a name, but I'm talking early season failures in bigger moments. Peyton Manning, and I'm not comparing the quarterbacks. I'm just saying I'm comparing the narratives.
You're comparing him to Peyton Manning?
Damn, I knew somebody was going to say, when I was
comparing. How could they not?
Don't even bring the name up. We're going to compare it.
I prepared this argument, and I knew somebody was going to do that. And I said, I hope somebody doesn't do that. You did it, but it's okay. Peyton Manning couldn't win the big one. Couldn't win the big one. And it was all sorts of reasons. But if we just look at the narrative, not the quarterback, didn't we learn a lesson?
No.
It's like Peyton Manning can't
games.
Win the big
we
one.
We got the challenge still like win going playoff off, games, but yeah. But look, no, at the end of the day, the narrative about Peyton Manning in big games is still true. He was not the kind of big game quarterback that Tom Brady and some of these other guys
were. No, he wasn't the same. Yeah.
All right, Challenge Light, what you got, Darnell?
Willock, James, I'm with y'all, man. He, you know, Kirk didn't show me enough to prove that he signed the credit. Well, I want to ask y'all, though, everybody's talking about it. Man. This play right here, the game-winning touchdown, was this an offensive pass interference?
Yes.
Thank
Hell
you.
No.
Hell yes. Yes.
Come on, Whit.
Listen. That man right there is a 260-something pound. The DB is, what, 200 pounds? And he gave him the flick. That flick of the wrist, that's about 240 pounds of pressure.
Look at that flick of the
pushing
wrist.
Pushing him off, okay? If he had did a little acting and did the Matrix throwback, they would have threw the flag. But he didn't.
He did. That's his fault. What do you say, is that a pass interference? Definitely he gained an advantage, but for me, where we grew up, this is fine. To me, this is fine. I think playoff football, you saw a lot of calls, very questionable calls that they would call in during the regular season. That's how it is in playoff football. Let them play. Let him go out there and jostle.
The game would be 7 hours if they called this, but you
I'm
know
saying
what?
It was, it was
technically, by the letter of the rule, that is beyond PI. You got an advantage, and you have a
get a wrist,
and the extension, and the flick of the wrist,
and the flick of the wrist,
the flick of the wrist. But
and the flick of the
I'm glad they didn't call this.
Thank you.
I'm
Thank
with
you.
That.
Yeah,
I'm
with that. Yeah. Call hey, this. I'm glad they didn't call, but it was PI.
Okay,
was
I'll PI say that sure. then. I agree. It is PI.
Yeah,
but I don't want to call.
It. I don't want to call.
Right. Like you don't want to be the one calling that one. Like even if he had gave a little tug holding on to the jersey, you wouldn't have called that.
No. And vice versa, if he had a little hold of his arm a little bit and whatever. I would have said, don't call.